This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always here on Mondays by Adam Burke. A lot to get to today as we are getting down to the nitty-gritty. We will get another playoff rankings, and I'm actually very curious about the playoff rankings on Tuesday. Just a quick programming note for all of you listening in or watching with us. We're going to do a little flip-flop here. Matt Eumanns is going to join me on Wednesday, and we'll get his picks. Another solid week for Matt, 5-1 last week. He's now 11-3 the last 2 weeks here on the pod. He'll be with me on Wednesday. We'll recap his bets on Thursday, but we're going to flip-flop and have Wes Reynolds break down the card with me on Thursday. So a little programming note there. As always, continue to rate, review, and subscribe. The subscriptions on YouTube continue to grow. Let's get to 1,000. That would be awesome as we are growing each and every week. The numbers have been fantastic, so please continue to hit that subscribe button on YouTube. All right, enough housekeeping, Adam Burke. A lot to get to today, and I want to start with Oklahoma's win over Alabama and the ramifications it has moving forward. Oklahoma wins 23-21. Bill Conley's SB Plus had them as a postgame win expectancy of around 4%. They were outgained on Saturday afternoon, 406-212. But turnovers were massive. They had a pick six, plus three in the turnover margin. And now Oklahoma, more than likely, Adam, when the rankings are revealed on Tuesday night, are going to be ahead of Alabama, ahead of Notre Dame, and very comfortably in the field, I would imagine, with two games at home remaining, Saturday against Missouri and next Saturday against LSU.
You know, there's something worse than having the right side of a handicap. I mean, there's nothing worse in the sports betting world than having the right side of a handicap and then it playing out like that. I was on Alabama. I liked Alabama. I felt like this Oklahoma team has been overrated for a while, right? I mean, you know, early on their defense was, they were a metrics darling, but they hadn't really played a whole lot of good offenses. Now that they're in SEC play, they have played some good offenses. And truth be told, I mean, they should be 2-3 in their last five games, but they're not because they won that game over the weekend against Alabama where Crimson Tide was the right side. Now, you mentioned it already with Connolly's 4% win expectancy. You know, Alabama should cover six and a half in that scenario pretty often. But like you said, turnovers are the big equalizer. And, you know, it's just, it's so interesting because we talked about this game last week on the show quite a bit. And we kept looking at Alabama and what they've done since that Florida State performance. And we're like, we're going to look back at this Florida State game and go, what the hell happened here? I mean, it was a loss against Oklahoma, but it was another pretty good performance overall for Alabama. So I'm really curious to see what happens with, you know, this group of what, six SEC teams now that are vying for the playoffs. You know, I get head-to-head, it has to matter, but at the same time, like, fluky things happen in a one-game sample where one team's a lot better than the other team and they still find a way to lose. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't hold that against Alabama too much, and I don't know if it's worth propping up Oklahoma over.
Look, Alabama has a win over Georgia on the road, a win over Vanderbilt, a win over Tennessee, a win on the road at Missouri, which looks a little bit less as impressive because of the injury to Bo Prabula, but that leads to kind of the unique situation. It's not a great week moving forward, but we do have Oregon and USC. We can get to that as that number has continued to rise, and we'll get to that in overreaction or market correction. But you look at this Oklahoma team, and Matt Zenitz of CBS Sports reported over the weekend that, and I'll read it quote verbatim here, sources tell CBS Sports there is early optimism that Bo Prabula may be able to return to action and start when the number 23 Tigers face Oklahoma on Saturday, just 3 weeks after suffering a nasty ankle injury. Like, is Missouri capable of going down to Norman and pulling off the upset here? And is this a situation, you know, it's funny to use the example, but Adam, is this a situation of Oklahoma going into Red River and playing John Mateer when they shouldn't have played John Mateer and he wasn't ready. I don't know. I'd still would be surprised if Bo Prabula played in this game, but you're looking at a number at 9.5 or 9 in the market. I mean, if Ahmad Hardy could go for 300 yards again, I think they've got a decent chance. But I'll just say this. I don't think Mississippi State's defense is on the same level as Oklahoma's.
Yeah, no, definitely not. You know, look, I mean, the thing that I kept poking holes in with Oklahoma is, you know, early on, I mean, they played Michigan in Bryce Underwood's first road start. You know, they played an Auburn team that, I mean, it's just gone completely downhill for them. You know, they hadn't really played any good offenses. They hadn't really played any high profile types of quarterbacks until they got to Texas and Arch Manning. And that wasn't even a good offense at that point in time, although Arch is looking better here of late. Seems like Sark's maybe sunk his teeth into him a little bit. South Carolina, I mean, I never want to speak of that Texas A&M game again.
We'll get to that.
With my wife.
I feel bad. I do have to issue a public apology on that game here in a moment, but continue.
You know, I mean, Ole Miss, really good offensive team. Tennessee, they can't really run the football. They're very, very pass dependent with Joey Aguilar. And then Alabama, I mean, Ty Simpson, you know, obviously a good quarterback. So the last 3 weeks, Oklahoma has played some pretty good quarterbacks here. But they haven't really played what I would consider an overly dominant rushing attack. I mean, I guess Ole Miss, you know, with Kwon Lacy, I mean, they're very good at running the football. But like Ahmad Hardy in this Missouri front, I mean, this is a test Oklahoma really hasn't faced yet, I don't think. So I think it's definitely a possibility, especially if Prabula's out there to, you know, maybe create a few more explosive plays in the passing game than what they've gotten in his absence.
So before we get the playoff rankings revealed on Tuesday night, and we'll react to them on Wednesday, I mentioned it already. I fully anticipate Oklahoma to jump into the top 10. They were number 11. They should. They got a huge win on the road. Alabama's going to drop, but I don't think either one of them is going to be behind Notre Dame. So it's kind of wild to think the committee has been very high on Notre Dame, based off of metrics and dominant performances, and obviously has led to a lot of discussions regarding Miami because of the head-to-head. But what's interesting to note here, Adam, is Notre Dame is going to drop in the rankings more than likely, even though they went on the road and beat the committee's 22nd best team by 3 touchdowns, and honestly should have been 4 touchdowns if not for the Nard Dog calling a late timeout in a meaningless game. Remember, this game didn't mean anything, but yet he still called a timeout with 5 seconds to go to score a touchdown. Marcus Freeman didn't seem too thrilled about that post game, but it's going to build up this situation. And our friend Brad Powers tweeted this out, and I don't know if it was his anti-Notre Dame shtick, because here's a little secret. Brad's a Notre Dame fan. But I agree with him. Notre Dame shouldn't be minus 2,500 to make the playoff. I see that. I see a path where Notre Dame gets left out. Is it likely? No. But they're going to drop, and they're going to be, as of now, come Tuesday night, Adam, the lowest at large in the field, with the two auto bids being the 11 and 12 seed.
I think one team that maybe we need to focus on a little bit here in this whole college football playoff discussion: how confident are we that Oregon beats USC and Washington?
The market's pretty confident that they're going to beat USC.
Right.
Market has bet that thing up from the look ahead was 7.5, and now we're at 9.5 right now. So the market really likes Oregon, but if you're a Notre Dame fan or a Miami fan, you are massive Trojan fans this weekend for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, when I look at this whole thing and I look at how this thing's playing out, you know, I mean, I just don't know where all of these, you know, kind of Big 12 teams are going to fit. You know, I mean, unless Texas Tech gets beat in the championship game, like the Big 12 should be a one bid league, right?
Yep.
The ACC doesn't even deserve the one bid that they're going to get.
Well, their best team is Miami, but they, of course, crystal balled the whole situation, losing on the road to SMU and losing at home to Louisville. So, I mean, just classic crystal ball. I don't know right. How they pulled that off. Because right now, you look at Miami, and I know it was NC State, but that's still the same NC State team that beat the crap out of Georgia Tech and beat Virginia. The irony of it all. And they got curb stomped by Miami. And Miami has got an opportunity to really make some impressive statements down the stretch, including a road game at Pitt Thanksgiving weekend. But look, Miami is the best team in the ACC. I don't think there's much debate outside of it, but they, of course, lost two games and games have to matter.
I will say, I mean, Virginia outgained Duke by almost 300 yards.
That was an impressive performance.
That was a very impressive performance. I mean, Duke, that was a 31-3 game going into the fourth quarter. On the road for Virginia, no less. So maybe Virginia is a little bit better than we've given them credit for here on this show. Boston College had 540 yards of offense against Georgia Tech in a game that the Yellow Jackets were very lucky to win. So, I mean, that's a one-bid league, without a doubt, right? One-bid league there. Big 12 should be a one-bid league. I still think that there's going to be a path and there's going to be an opportunity to put Notre Dame in this thing, right? First of all, massive brand name, right? So if it's between them and somebody else, and there's not really a tipping point from a metric standpoint or anything like that, Notre Dame's going to get in. Also, again, I think there's something to be said about them being the runner-up last year. You know, I mean, I think that, sure, I guess 2025, 26 is a brand new season and all of that, but, I mean, you were runner-up, and you gave Ohio State a game last year, very much so. And so I think if they're kind of on the cusp with somebody else, I mean, is that worth being minus 3,000 to make the playoff? No. But if they're on the cusp with somebody else, I think the playoff committee goes that route and does take them over somebody who's close but less of a name.
Well, I think the weird situation that seems to be brewing is what happens if Notre Dame and Miami are next to each other in the final rankings, right? Like Notre Dame lost to Miami week one, and as the season has gone on, Notre Dame has now won 8 straight games by double digits. They've got a win over USC. Pitt will drop out of the rankings, but they were ranked. The Navy win, I guess, got better this weekend because Navy beat South Florida, and they beat the crap out of Navy, even though Blake Horvath didn't play in that game. So, like, the metrics love Notre Dame, right? If you look at FPI, they're 5th. I think Sagarin has them 4th. If you look at, you know, just all the advanced numbers, they're very high up there, and I think that's why ultimately they are ranked where they are, similarly to Utah a little bit, as they're getting a lot of love despite not a ton of substance to their resume. But yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a scenario brewing, especially if Oregon beats USC, that, you know, Notre Dame just could be in an uncomfortable spot. So while I've obviously am a Notre Dame fan, as everyone knows, I just think there's a possibility of this thing being a little uncomfortable for them down the stretch, because their last two games are against Syracuse and Stanford, and that's going to hurt their, you know, strength of record, strength of schedule, et cetera. So, look, we'll see how this whole thing plays out here. You know, they looked the part on Saturday, and I was very impressed, even though I thought CJ Carr was kind of a little off. He threw that pick six, but the Notre Dame defense, you know, I need to give credit where credit's due. Chris Ash has really turned that thing around. Those first 2 weeks, Adam, it was a disaster. Even the third game against Purdue wasn't really that impressive. They gave up a ton of points. Since then, man, this has been a dominant defense. And, you know, they made Mason Heinschel look like a true freshman.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, again, we've kind of talked about this, right? Where if you're steamrolling at the tail end, like, you know, there's a little bit of recency bias that comes into this whole equation. You know, if you lose games all the way back in September, they certainly don't mean near as much as if you lost a game in November or something like that. So that's a feather in Notre Dame's cap, I guess, as we go forward. You know, usually these things kind of work themselves out, right?
Like,
there'll be head-to-head results that happen, things like that. When you look at the teams that are kind of on this playoff bubble, I don't know that this year is going to work itself out, because I think a lot of them outside of the conference championship games, you know, a lot of these teams, like, this is the SEC week where nobody plays anybody, right? And then some of the rivalry games, like Alabama's just way better than Auburn, you know, Ole Miss is just way better than Mississippi State. So I don't know that the rivalry games, you know, the throw out the record bullshit, like, that's not really a thing. Like, one team's just better than another team. It's probably going to work out that way. Maybe it'll be closer than what the line implies. But, like, I don't know how much of this is going to work itself out, which is why I kind of keyed in on Oregon, because I don't think this game against USC is a gimme by any means. And Washington's had some issues, some Jekyll and Hyde style performances. But again, from a metrics standpoint, they're a really, really good football team. And we've talked about this on the show. I don't know how many other shows have talked about this, but Dan Lanning's a great bully. Dan Lanning is a guy who struggles in, you know, pretty significant games. So I don't think Washington is any gimme at all on the road at Husky Stadium in the regular season finale.
Well, you talk about a team that's Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, Washington on the road, it's like, what's that Seinfeld episode where Jerry's dating a girl with the two-face, like, different, like, in the back booth, she's gorgeous. That's what Washington is at home. So you look at Washington, who lost last week to Wisconsin, and it's Purdue, I get it, but they crushed Purdue, crushed Illinois. You know, the Ohio State game didn't go out all that well, but yeah, I agree. I mean, a rivalry game, you mentioned it. That's a rivalry game. That's going to be kind of a funky game. So yeah, we'll see how that ultimately plays out there with Washington against Oregon. You know, sticking in the playoff discussion and, you know, talking to you about the G5 has been something that we have talked a lot about. And I know one of the teams that you were on in the preseason magazine, Western Michigan, looks like they are going to be more than likely playing for the MAC title. But the MAC, rightfully so, will not factor in the playoff discussion. The Mountain West is... Geesh, I mean, I watched that whole San Diego State Boise State game on Saturday night just because I had a bet on it. Yikes, that was a pretty ugly game. Mountain West is not going to factor in this thing. And then over the weekend, Adam, you know, a team that I thought had finally figured itself out, had overcome that Memphis loss. And, you know, we talked about it. I didn't give it out as a best bet, but you looked at the simple math of the point spread. It just didn't really compute to me why USF was such a heavy favorite in Annapolis, and they lose to Navy. So now when you look at the G5, North Texas is minus 110. James Madison is plus 170. Tulane is plus 550. And that's pretty much it for who's going to make the college football playoff. East Carolina's got three losses. They had a nice win over the weekend over Memphis. They're still very in the thick of the discussion, even though they got a tricky one this weekend at UTSA. What do you make of the G5 situation for the playoff and anything you're looking at from a bet standpoint?
Well, I mean, you think about how good Boise State was last year during the regular season, and they got punked in the playoffs. I am terrified for whichever group of five team makes it this year. On what that number is going to look like, and what
they're probably
going
to have to play at Georgia too.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, right between the hedges. Yeah, man. I just like James Madison is an awesome story, right? Year in and year out. I mean, what they did with Kurt Cignetti, obviously, we see what Cignetti is capable of in Indiana. Bob Chesney comes in, and they just don't miss a beat at all whatsoever. And they lost a lot of talent, whether it went with Cignetti to Indiana or just transferred elsewhere across the country. But I mean, here they are, just a completely dominant team. They're plus 170 in point differential in the Sun Belt, which, yes, it's a bad conference, but still, all you can do are play the teams that are on the schedule. And if you blow them out, like, that's what you're supposed to do. At the same time, James Madison's best win is
Old Dominion, probably.
Yeah, especially because of the magnitude of the score. Like, does their best win come this weekend when they beat Washington State? Like, you know, so, I mean, again, I get it, right? I mean, they've lost one game and it was to Louisville, so it was to a power conference opponent. But I don't know, man. I still think if you want the best possible game, which you're probably not going to get anyway, it's got to be one of the teams out of the American, whether it's North Texas just because they're fun as hell, or Tulane because they're probably the closest from a talent standpoint to a Power Four team. I don't know. But, like, does Navy actually find a way into this thing? Probably not, because of the head-to-head loss to North Texas. I don't know. I just put North Texas in there against Georgia and let us have, like, a total of 70, and then we'll just go from there.
Well, I'll say this. I think when you're looking at it, and, you know, the tie breaks are going to be weird and how this all plays out. You know, if Navy beats Memphis, it could get easy, right? If Navy loses to Memphis on Thanksgiving and East Carolina loses at UTSA this weekend, then North Texas and Tulane will play in the AAC championship game. And I think that game would be at North Texas. I don't know for sure. But from a betting standpoint, look, I took a little nibble on Saturday night on JMU. They were, I think, plus 198 at FanDuel. That number is still kind of out there. But I think the point that you made is fair. You look at the Sun Belt, it is not a very strong conference this year. JMU, can they crush Washington State? Can they crush Coastal Carolina and then beat Southern Miss to wrap up the season 12-1? The thing about Tulane that's interesting to me, Adam, is they've got two losses on the year, but they've got a win over Duke, which I know doesn't look great, but it's still a win over a Power Four team. And they were pretty dominant in that win over the Blue Devils. I do wonder if Tulane at plus 550, if you're looking for a little action, could be maybe worth a look there. Tulane's lone loss was on the road at UTSA. It was a disastrous Thursday night game. But if they win out here, they beat Temple, they beat Charlotte, and then they're able to beat North Texas, I think Tulane at plus 550 is not a bad look right now if you're looking at from a betting standpoint. Once again, I don't know the tiebreak situation. Can Navy beat Memphis? I would just say this, Adam. Minus 110 on North Texas, I would not touch because no. I don't know if they're a favorite against Tulane. Or maybe they're a small favorite. That thing's in Denton. So the only two looks I would take would be JMU. I don't think there's a ton of value there. Or Tulane. I think there's actually a decent look at plus 550 for Tulane. If you look at the remaining schedule and what their resume would look like, 11-2 with a win over North Texas, a win over Memphis, a win over Duke would be better than what JMU would have. And it would just, the committee would have to ask themselves this question. Remember, a couple years ago, the committee incorrectly put Liberty into the New Year's Six over SMU. And if it's one win off, they've clearly favored the American over any other G5 conference so far based off of rankings. We'll see on Tuesday night if JMU shows up. But I do think Tulane could be, if you're looking for a bet, probably the best bet that is out there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do think that the game against Temple is a little bit tricky. I mean, KC Keeler has done an incredible job with that Temple team this season.
My Temple Owls.
That is not a talented team at all, but he's done a phenomenal job with that team. And I mean, again, Tulane just over a touchdown favorite in that one. They shouldn't lose the game, but obviously stranger things have happened throughout the course of, you know, every college football season in history. So, but I do agree with you, right? I mean, I think if you're looking for a value play of somebody to make the college football playoff, Tulane is the one because they get through this week. They're going to humiliate Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte's one of the worst teams in the country. And then the North Texas game, I mean, I do have North Texas favored in that game. I think 5.5 would be my number in that one. Probably higher than what the market would put it at. I would say North Texas probably 3.5 would be the number in that one. Maybe 2.5, just expecting Tulane being the bigger, you know, name of the group of five. Maybe them getting a little bit of the love. You know what, though? I'm really curious, and I hope we get North Texas and Tulane, because I want to know how good North Texas really is.
I agree.
You know, I mean, giving up a 60 burger to South Florida, that wasn't great at all. But also, that was the first real team that they played up until that point. They haven't played a real team since. I guess Navy's okay. But again, Navy is a team that, you know, has dealt with a lot of injuries at the quarterback position with Blake Horvath. And, you know, he was hobbled around in that game over the weekend. So I want to know how good North Texas is. That's what I truly want to know. And so I hope that's the game that we get. And maybe it does kind of play out that way.
I do want to mention this real quickly. You mentioned that weird Washington State game. I had Washington State on Saturday night just because of the Louisiana Tech situation where lost their starting quarterback. They're going out to Pullman. They're playing the late night game on the CW. Wazoo going to James Madison. We've seen Wazoo be competitive against Ole Miss and be competitive against Virginia. It is worth noting, because everything kind of comes into play here, JMU should want to put up a big number here. Why? Uh-huh. Because North Texas beat Wazoo by 49. So they're going to be comparables. So if you're James Madison and you're trying to put out style points, and my guess, Adam, is that when the rankings come out on Tuesday, North Texas will have that 12th spot. That's just my hunch. If you're JMU, you got to put on a show against Washington State on Saturday afternoon. So just keep that in mind. Right now, they're a big favorite, 13.5. But I think James Madison, this isn't, in my opinion, even though they have Coastal Carolina next, they're coming off a dominant win over App State. If you're Bob Chesney, style points absolutely matter, and you've got to put it on Washington State here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do wonder if maybe that is a line that goes up, you know, in light of what we see with the rankings that come out on Tuesday. Because generally speaking, I don't care about the college football playoff rankings. They don't really mean anything to me in a betting context. But we are getting to the point where they kind of do, especially when you're talking about style points. Like, Syracuse is getting, what, 37 against Notre Dame?
35.5, yeah, something like that.
There's no number I would take Syracuse at. Because it makes sense for Notre Dame to win that game by 80 if they can. Probably not going to, but it makes sense for them to try to do that. So, you know, yeah, this is something where, because of the nature of how the playoff looks right now, you know, style points definitely do matter quite a bit for some of these teams. One other thing that I want to mention here in terms of the market, just sort of looking, you know, from a 10,000 foot view. So you may start to see, you'll definitely see it next week, but I think you'll start to see it a little bit later on in the week here this week as well. Teams that have 4 or 5 wins, right? Mm-hmm. Teams that have to win to make a bowl game. They're in this must-win situation, especially if you have 4 wins, you got to win the next 2 weeks, right? If you have 5 wins, you got a little bit of a margin for error, but you don't want to take that into the next week. Or if you're playing a better opponent, you don't want to chance it, stuff like that. So there are these must-win situations, right? I know we talk about situational spots and all these kinds of things, you know, on this show. I know you talk about it a lot on VSiN Primetime as well. But remember, these are teams that are 5-5 right now, right? They're not very good. These are not teams that you really want to lay a premium with. So it's very important to look at the teams with 5 wins. And I wrote about all of them in my opening line report that I posted Sunday night over at VSiN.com. There's a lot of them, right? I mean, there's 4 in the American, there's 4 in the ACC, 3 in the Big Ten, 3 in the Big 12, 2 in the Big Ten, so on and so forth. Like, don't fall into a trap of laying too much with these teams because, oh, they want to make a bowl. First of all, we don't know that for sure. Second of all, like, they're 5-5 for a reason. They're not consistent, or maybe they're not very good. So don't, you know, lay big prices with these 5-win teams just because of the perception that they have to win.
So it's a fair point. Look, every game is a different discussion. Look at the situation. Is it a first-year coach? Is it, you know, I know people brought up, and look, Penn State ended up dominating Michigan State, so I'm not going to hide from a bad bet, but people brought up to me, well, you know, Penn State has to win out to make a bowl game. I'm like, do you think Penn State gives a shit about going to the Pinstripe Bowl?
Right.
Like, that, you know, no, but they went out and they dominated Michigan State. Those two things, in my opinion, are separate from the discussion there. So, all right, let's take a quick break.
I do want to mention real quick about Penn State, too. I mean, did you see the way they celebrated for the interim? Like, that was making its way around social media. Like, they gave him the Gatorade bath. They were carrying him around on the sidelines. Those are all things that you want to think about, too, right? You know, like, I don't know if we're going to have any more coaches fired at this point in time because it seems kind of, you know, counterproductive with 2 games left. I guess it's still a possibility, but, like, is this team still fighting for the interim? Or to the point that, you know, you were close to alluding to, and I think you were going to get there eventually. If you're a team like Temple, right, you don't go to many bowl games. Mm-hmm. It means a lot more to you to go to a bowl game, right? Like, does Clemson care about playing in a bowl game on December 22nd? Probably not.
They're still going to beat Furman, but they'll go to a bowl game. But, right. Like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, Temple, like, I was thinking about it over the weekend. Utah State, and I don't know who watched that game. That was, I mean, you feel bad for kickers sometimes. Like, that poor guy, he missed an extra point. He had not missed a field goal all year, missed a field goal in regulation, missed a field goal to win the game at the end of regulation, missed a field goal at the end of the first overtime, and then UNLV wins in double overtime. But like Utah State, for example, it's the first year under Bronco Mendenhall. You know, I haven't bet them yet, but I think Utah State is certainly a look at for this week because I don't know how good Fresno is. And I actually like this Utah State team from a ability to score standpoint. So, yeah, look FIU. At every situation. And to your point, don't just blindly bet, you know, a random squad because they're 4-6 and they have to win the last two games. But there are going to be situations for sure that you could look at where there might be that extra oomph from a particular team to try to get to bowl eligibility.
Yeah, FIU, I think, is a really big one here. You know, FIU's got 5 wins, so they got 2 cracks at it. I mean, they play Liberty this week, so they would certainly love to beat Liberty and, you know, get themselves into a bowl game. But again, you're talking about a first-year head coach in Willie Simmons that, you know, when you've got a first-year head coach, you're trying to change the direction of the program. You know, all these coaches are going to use culture as a buzzword and all of that. I mean, they haven't made a bowl game since 2019. Like, that's a team that cares, right? Does Kansas State care? Does Baylor care when Dave Aranda is going to get fired at the end of the year? You know, so there are these teams that, like, some are going to be hyper-motivated. They may not be very good, but at least you know you're going to get a max effort out of them, whereas others, you know, you don't really know. Like Rice, right? Rice is a team that they don't go bowling a ton. First-year head coach and Scott Abel, I don't know what their schedule looks like. I'd have to check. But, like, that's a team that's probably going to try real hard to win either this week or next. So
it's going to be tough. Yeah. They got North Texas and South Florida.
Yeah, so they probably won't. But they're going to try, right? So if nothing else, maybe that makes them a good, because they're a huge underdog in both of those games.
Yeah.
Maybe that makes them a good underdog bet, you know, stuff like that.
All right, let's take a quick break. I do have to issue an apology. It broke my heart on Saturday, and I'm being honest, I felt bad. We'll get into that, and I'm curious to get Mr. Burke's thoughts on what unfolded in College Station. But it is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It's a big week because my Bows are in town, baby. It's going to be a fun one on the turf at Allegiant Stadium. I'll be honest, we'll get into this game in a little bit. Surprise, the total is at what it's at, only 64.5. And I say only because last week it was like 71 against Utah State. But as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, our friends over at Rainbow Authentics have been a proud sponsor all year long since we started the year out on the island for that season opening win for the Bows against Stanford. And they will continue to be a sponsor all throughout the rest of the regular season. So check them out. You see my hat right here. They got some new gear, from my understanding, on the precipice. So we will keep you updated on that. But every item tells a story, whether it's that game-worn jersey, a signed ball, or unique collectibles. You'll be capturing a moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond the memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes, coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics will make sure you look your best every single game day. Maybe you're headed out to Allegiant Stadium on Friday night. So check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor all season long. Mr.
Are
Burke?
Are you part of the VSiN group that's going to attend that game on Friday night?
I will be there, but I will not be with the VSiN contingent. I will be with my Rainbow Authentics friends and family that, over there.
I will that's a really good choice for your liver. And also for trying to do the show on Saturday morning.
Yes, I do have a radio/television show that starts at 6 a.m. local. So we will try to be responsible at a game that kicks off at 10:30 Eastern. But looking forward to that game. It actually is a really fun game, and it should be one at Allegiant Stadium. Before we dive into that game and talk about a little bit more what unfolded this past weekend, what do we got going on over at VSiN.com, Adam?
There's a lot, man.
Yeah.
It's a really busy time of the year. You know, I mean, I talked about this last week. Like, we finally got rid of baseball, and then college basketball started like 2 days later. So we're into the third week now of the college basketball season. Greg Peterson with a daily article 7 days a week. I do one Monday through Saturday. You know, we're wrapping up the, I guess, All right, not even really calendar year with the PGA Tour, because their calendar year is pretty strange in terms of when they, you know, restart things and all of that. So your Thursday guest this week, Wes Reynolds, previewing golf for us over at the website. Tell you what, man, there's a lot going on with the college football situations, the NFL, NBA. Zachary Cohen's covering that. And in fact, we brought back the Hardwood Handicappers podcast with Zachary Cohen, Jonathan Davis, Daily NHL Picks. We got a lot going on. And honestly, I would say probably our best special offer is going on right now over at vsin.com. You know, we have special offers throughout, you know, the course of the year and all of that. I guess maybe it's not up yet, but it will be soon. Our Black Friday special. You know, we're not far away from the Thanksgiving holiday. Our Black Friday special is the best deal that we offer throughout the entire year. So when that goes live over at vsin.com/subscribe, I highly encourage you to take advantage of that, because you're going to get a lot, man. I mean, you know, that'll take you through the Super Bowl. That'll take you through, obviously, the college football playoff, through March Madness as well, when people actually start to care about college basketball, the start of the MLB season. Like, you get a lot in that Black Friday special. So when that goes live at vsin.com/subscribe, jump on it immediately. Take advantage. It's a great, great deal.
So I mentioned going into break, and man, so on Saturday, I put out a poll for the tailgate show, which once again, 9 a.m. Eastern time. You can catch me on VSIN and our many affiliates across the country. Shout out to the Marquee Network, Masson in D.C., Nesson in New England, and Sportsnet Pittsburgh as well. But I put out a simple poll. Which underdog is most likely to pull the upset in the four ranked games? It was Texas, Georgia, Notre Dame, Pitt, Iowa, USC, Oklahoma, Bama. Iowa won the poll, 35% of folks. And then Oklahoma actually came in second, who did pull out the outright upset. But a listener to the program by the Twitter handle Trip Tepper said, this isn't ranked versus ranked, but here's an upset write-in for you. South Carolina over A&M. There's a fine line between stupid and clever, as we like to say, a fine line between genius and jerk. And I got an issue, an apology. I mushed this guy because I was feeling excited for him. He wrote in, he was watching the show, and I put out the old googly eye emoji when it was 30-3 at halftime. And then lo and behold, Texas A&M has the biggest comeback in school history and wins 31-30. So I'm going to tap my chest to Trip Tepper. I mushed him there on social media. And you might have mushed him a little bit, too, because you sent me a text message, Adam, about them Gamecocks.
I did. I sent a Ric Flair gif wearing a Gamecocks jersey at the Gamecocks athletic complex. And then it was an hour and 20 minutes later when I texted back, or not. So my wife grew up in the Columbia area, so I've kind of adopted South Carolina. I've actually been to more South Carolina games than Ohio State games in my lifetime, which is wild to me, being, you know, born and raised in Cleveland, having Ohio State 2 hours down the road. They've been good basically my whole life. But I've been to more South Carolina games than Ohio State games. And I took South Carolina plus the points. I thought, you know what? They're finally getting rid of Mike Shula. This is a good thing. Like, he's completely neutered Lenora Sellers. I think they're going to show up here. I really think they're going to show up here. And they really showed up for a half. Oh, yeah. Shane Beamer taunting the crowd on the way in at halftime. And then it just, I mean, it was astonishing the rate at which it fell apart in the third quarter. And then, of course, they get a gift takeaway to have a shot in the final possession, and then whatever that final series was, I don't know. Nick Harbor getting hurt really didn't help, but also, like, can we just mention what a loser that deputy is for bumping the South Carolina players in the tunnel and then trying to pick a fight with them? Like, what the hell was that, man?
That was one of the more bizarre things of the whole weekend. Nick Harbor, by the way, he had what, every defensive player next to him, and just ran away from all of them.
His fourth down catch to keep the game going was outrageous. But of course, he got hurt on it because he landed pretty hard on his shoulder and chest, or in shoulder and back. So,
First team in the SEC to overcome a 27-plus point deficit since 2004. Previous teams were 0-286. So quite the newsworthy thing there. Texas A&M holds on to an unblemished record. And, you know, we didn't really mention Texas a ton. They get the loss, obviously, to Georgia. Georgia pulls away. I was very impressed by Georgia in that game, especially going up against that Texas defense. You know, Texas, if they were to beat A&M in the regular season finale, it would be pretty fascinating to see what the committee would do with a three-loss Texas, who would have wins over Oklahoma and A&M, have obviously lost to Florida, which gets worse by the day. But I don't think I see a three-loss Texas jumping a Notre Dame or an Oregon. No, not an Oregon. Oregon's only got one loss. But I don't really see that unfolding, even though they have the head-to-head with Oklahoma. But yeah, that was quite the comeback there. And, you know, leads us into this, the Heisman Trophy discussion. You know, and you've kind of been all over it from the jump, and I give you credit for it. The Julian Sain deserves credit. Right now at DraftKings, Fernando Mendoza of Indiana is odds on, minus 110. Sain's plus 180. Ty Simpson, it was nice knowing you. He's now, I think, like 100-1 or something. Oh, there he is, 150-1. Is Marcel Reed still in this thing? Is Sain? I think Sain's very much still in this contest here. I'm curious, you know, as we kind of update the Heisman market, where your thoughts are on it right now.
I mean, look, if you want to call Marcel Reed's comeback his Heisman moment, I mean, you can. Right, he threw for 439 yards, but also the two interceptions. Seven carries for 13 yards, like it. He put up numbers getting his team back into the game, which matters. And obviously they won the football game. But like on the whole, his numbers and frankly, nobody's numbers are Heisman worthy this season in terms of what the benchmark has been for the award in the past. It's usually like 40 plus total touchdowns. None of these guys who are at the top are going to get there. The thing that is going to be really interesting to watch with Ohio State this week against Rutgers is I wonder how much Julian Sain is going to play in this game. I think if they can get ahead by halftime and be up, you know, three scores, something like that, which is definitely a possibility against Rutgers, I don't think Sain plays the second half. You're already talking about Carnell Tate hurt. You're already talking about Jeremiah Smith hurt. There's no reason to put anybody at risk when you absolutely have to beat Michigan this season.
Yes.
Like, you just have to do it if you're Ryan Day. So if Sain only plays a half here, right, like he's not going to do much. Indiana's on a bye, so Mendoza could put up numbers against Purdue. But again, a situation where if you're Kurt Cignetti, like it's cool if your quarterback wins the Heisman, but also you want your quarterback healthy for the Big Ten championship game. So I don't know. Like I think there's scenarios over the next 2 weeks. And if Sain plays well against Michigan, then, you know, I mean, unless he's terrible against Indiana, should be his award. But I just don't know that, like, there's a great entry point into the Heisman market right now. I just don't think that there is.
No, I agree. I mean, you could. It's hard for me to make the case on Marcel Reed. And I know he still has the SEC championship game, the Texas game. Look, he's got two high-profile games, so maybe I'm too blinded by what I saw on Saturday. And they did come back and win, so he deserves credit for that. But I think the point that you make is really fair, which is, these aren't gaudy numbers by any stretch of the imagination by anybody. It feels like it's going to be a Mendoza Sain Heisman off on, you know, that Saturday in December. But I don't know who I would bet. I don't think I would bet anybody right now, at least as it's playing out here, Adam. I want to do a little overreaction or market correction as we do. So each week I always take a look at the look ahead lines and then update them after the week unfolds. Some decent size movement. I want to start in the Big 12, Adam, because BYU is a team I've called Virginia Light because they're a team that's a bit fortunate. The numbers haven't been great, but sometimes you just got to, you know, tip your cap. And, you know, we talked about Virginia already. That was very impressive what they did against Duke. BYU was dominant against TCU, and that was a game where the market bet that game like they knew the outcome, man. That thing went from like 6 down to 3. I know a lot of pretty sharp bettors that I respect in the Circa Friday Football Invitational had TCU in that spot, and BYU dominated that game. And now we've seen a flip from BYU 3.5-point dog to a 2.5-point favorite at Cincinnati as Cincinnati loses to Arizona and Brent Brennan's squad gets a pretty impressive win over the weekend. So I'm curious if this is a market correction or an overreaction in your eyes.
So this one's a market correction for me. And in fact, this is a big mover for me, too, from a power rating standpoint. I upgraded BYU 3 points. I've been a skeptic, as anybody who listens to this show is fully aware. Maybe they're just pretty good. You know, I mean, they definitely have some fortunate outcomes, some wrong side wins, but Bear Bachmeier's playing pretty well. Kalani Sitake is a very good coach. I think we've definitely seen that over the years with BYU. So I gave them a 3-point bump and I dropped Cincinnati 4 points. So basically a 7-point adjustment in this number for me. I now have BYU -5 in this game in my power ratings. Cincinnati's been exposed the last 2 weeks. Brendan Sorsby's not played well at all whatsoever. Losing at home to Arizona, not a good look, especially early kick. You know, Sorsby was very inaccurate once again. Utah took him to the woodshed in that game that they played. Cincinnati's kind of shown what they really are, I think, over the last couple of games, and that deserved a pretty significant downgrade for me. This is a market correction. At the same time, will either one of us be shocked if BYU loses? Probably not. But this line, BYU deserves to be favored. This movement is correct.
Yeah, I'm going to probably try to make a case as the week goes on for Cincinnati being a home dog here.
Are.
But we'll see.
That's what you do.
haven't put this one. Thank you. I appreciate that I have a reputation of that.
Oh, very much so. Your reputation is spending 45 minutes talking about Notre Dame and finding some ugly home dog to bet on.
I mean, I do have a Notre Dame shirt that has the word dog on it right now. So, I mean, I guess that's just everything.
I saw the D and then the shamrock, and I was like, I don't know where this is going because I couldn't see the rest of it. So
it's a T-shirt from my buddies over at Obvious Shirts after Notre Dame beat Georgia last year. Got that dog in us. So
for me, it looks like it says got that D. So
oh,
I don't
no.
know if that's
yeah,
what you wanted
need
to say.
We need to shift that down a little bit. Dog. Yeah, we this is a family program here.
I think you need to wear a Rainbow Authentic shirt as well to go along with the hat instead of these suggestive Notre Dame Fighting Irish T-shirts.
It's true. I do need to think about that. Well, speaking of that particular game, of the other games this week, well, let's hit on USC Oregon because the look ahead line was 7. And, you know, I'll give, as much as I don't like to give USC credit for anything, I'll give them credit for the win over the weekend. That's not their typical game. I thought they ran the ball well. Man, it felt like Iowa. Whoo, buddy, that catch at the end of the game, just a inch from making that really fascinating of a finish there. But USC gets a win, hard fought. Iowa gets the cover. This number's up to 9.5. The market loves Oregon. And, man, if it gets to 10, I know the troubles that Lincoln Riley has on the road. But, man, if it gets to 10, it's going to be hard for me not to look at the Trojans here.
So one of the things that you'll notice, I think I've mentioned this on previous shows, early on in the week, there are a lot of people out there I've found, or at least based on seeing the line movement that I've seen, there are a lot of people out there that have yards per play based college football betting models. Oregon is number 3 in the country in both offensive and defensive yards per play. So this is a metrics darling type of team, right? So it's not really a big surprise to see the line move on them. Oh, I've also seen a lot of line movement towards teams that really stand out on defense, Oklahoma being one of them. The market loves Oklahoma a lot more than I do. And they're 6 in the country in yards per play on defense. So that's something you want to look for early on in the week. Teams with big yards per play discrepancies, money will come in on them. And when you look at USC here on this season, they are, where the hell did they go here? You know, this is a team that I think that, you know, the fact that they've kind of taken away a lot of the turnover-worthy throws from Jaden Maiava has been really good. They're number 2 in the nation in yards per play on offense. But when you look at them defensively, they are nowhere near where Oregon is. So that's why you're seeing a line move in this game where, You know, I think that you've got a USC team at 72nd in yards per play on defense against a top five team on both sides of the ball. That's why you get the line move that you get here. At the same time, there's something to me that's felt underwhelming about Oregon, even though they really stand out in the yards per play metrics and a lot of other metrics as well. There's just something about them that just, I mentioned it earlier, like to me, they feel vulnerable in these last two games against USC and Washington, even though, again, statistically speaking, I have no reason to feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be heavy favorites in both these games. Let me ask you this. Which game do you think they're more likely to lose? Saturday against USC or next week against Washington?
Definitely the Washington game. I mean, right now I would have Oregon an 8-point favorite in that game, which is, you know, kind of in the realm of this number too, which is pretty interesting. But I think going on the road, I think Jed Fish is a better coach than Lincoln Riley. I think that's a spot where I think Washington's very live in that game, honestly.
And those two teams hate each other.
Oh,
I mean,
very much
I know
so.
Yeah. Rivalries throw the, I mean, our, you know, Jeff Schwartz, who's done work with us at VSIN over the years, he lets us know how much they hate Washington. I'm pretty sure it's replicated on the other side,
yes,
too. So they would love nothing more than to ruin the season of Oregon. So probably going to be a spot where I look at the dog in Washington in that one. But no real other big movements that I noticed. I mean, Florida State went from a dog to a favorite against NC State. I mean, good luck to figure out that conference. I actually wanted to ask your thoughts on this one. So I bet UNC last week. I bet them a couple times since they've seemingly turned things around. They were not the right side, and they didn't get there. And now you've got Duke, who is wildly 5-5. Obviously, this is a rivalry game. This was look ahead 8.5. It's down to 6.5. You know, if I could get a full 7, I probably could be talked into North Carolina here. I don't know where Duke's head's going to be at after this, because they just kind of screwed up their chance of playing not only in the playoff, or excuse me, not only in the ACC championship, Adam, but the college football playoff.
Yeah, there's something happening there, losing 3 of their last 4 games. I realize 2 of them were ranked opponents, but both of those games at home, the Georgia Tech and Virginia, and they weren't super competitive in either one. The UConn game, right? Like, I get it. It's just a random one-off in the middle of conference play. Like, I totally understand that. Also, the Clemson game that they won, Clemson was far and away the better team on the stat sheet in that game. That was one of those Parker Fleming specials,
mm-hmm,
with the net success rate, where Clemson just deserved a much better fate in that one. So really, you could say this is 4 weeks in a row that Duke hasn't played very well. Clearly, I haven't adjusted them down enough. I have Duke minus 10 in this game. Probably not accounting for the fact that, you know, their last 4 weeks have been that bad. So I can't argue with you looking at North Carolina here. I mean, this is North Carolina's Super Bowl pretty much, and they could still beat Duke and NC State to get to a bowl game, if that's something that they want to do. But this Duke team just doesn't feel in rhythm enough to, you know, go out there and beat a rival team by more than a score. So I understand what you're thinking. Like I said, my numbers view it differently, but Duke's probably a team that just kind of slipped through the cracks for me.
Yeah, and you look at Duke, really bad defensively. UNC is bad offensively. Does bad offense trump bad defense here in this spot? And I've actually had moments. I mean, they gave up 400 yards to Wake. By the way, I don't know if they do team totals on bad beats, but I'm pretty sure that'll be on bad beats. I knew a couple people who had Wake Forest team total under, and Bill Belichick called a timeout with like 12 seconds left when Wake Forest was trying to run out the clock, and then they scored a touchdown. So always fun. All right, I wanted to hit on this one before we take a look at some midweek games, including the Bows and the Rebels. I don't know what in God's name has happened to my guy, Coach Ken, and his squad, man. Holy smokes. San Jose State was laying 10 against Nevada and lost 55-10. And I know Walker Egitt's performance was not one that impressed you all that much on Saturday.
No, I mean, this was a Nevada team that had scored 66 points in their first 5 Mountain West games combined. So, dude, I have no idea what has been going on with Walker Edith the last 2 weeks. Like, the game against Air Force, that was odd. You know, I mean, he wound up with 336 yards, but that was very, very strange, the way that he played in that game. And then I don't know what last week was. Like, maybe he's hurt. I don't know. But for a dude that's put up monster numbers on a team that's not very good, by the way, 11 of 23 for 74 yards and three interceptions against Nevada. Like, what? Strange, man. He wound up getting benched in that game. Like, it was awkward, to say the least. Yeah, I mean, but then again, you got a San Diego State team that, you know, had 17 passing yards last week. So
I don't know how you can lay that points with San Diego State. But San Diego State right now, man, that was a good win over the weekend and easy under. So much appreciated to Spencer Danielson and the play calling for Boise State as they were terrified to throw a forward pass.
Staying in the Mountain West here. So New Mexico and Air Force. Maybe people aren't paying attention to how good Liam Zarco was for Air Force. But, like, they were pathetic on offense before he took over the starting job. And pathetic is putting it nicely. And New Mexico's only a 3-point favorite in this game. Like, I realize the way that Air Force plays is something that, you know, kind of makes it a little bit hard to line their games at times. But, I mean, New Mexico's won 4 in a row. They beat UNLV on the road. They beat Utah State, who I think is a pretty good team and also has a mobile quarterback in Bryson Barnes. I know last week against Colorado State, they only won by 3, but that was another one of those misleading types of games to me where, you know, I mean, New Mexico lost 4 fumbles in that game. So fumble luck is what really kept them from blowing Colorado State out, because Colorado State had 3 picks and a fumble themselves. This line is too cheap to me. I mean, we're talking about 8-win New Mexico probably with a win this week, and maybe 9 if they find a way to upset San Diego State in the finale. But Air Force without Liam Zarco, with probably the worst defense in the country, I don't get that line at all.
Well, it's one of those things where if you're quick to the trigger and you realize, like you did, and I certainly did, because I had Air Force on Saturday and Liam Zarco breaking his hand or whatever happened, it's not ideal for your bet when you're taking points with Air Force. But I took pick with New Mexico. I mean, this thing was lined initially Air Force as the favorite, and people, I guess the odds makers didn't realize that Zarco was done for the year. So, yeah, it is. You've seen the market correct itself a little bit on that one. So, yeah, curious to see how that one plays out. But Air Force, you know, I thought they were going to beat UConn early on in that game. UConn did not get off the bus in a clear letdown spot. But when your starting quarterback gets injured, and then, you know, it's always good when you have a 19-play, 90-yard drive that lasts 11 minutes and 50 seconds and you get 0 points. That's it's always good for your bet when you know that's the way it's going to play out. But let's hit a couple weekday games here before we get out of here. We've got full on Maction. Ohio's a 33-point favorite against UMass.
Yeah, I'm going to try and figure this out here. Try to run this in the Killer Sports database, but like, has Ohio ever been a 30-point favorite against any FBS team? Like, I doubt it. UMass's performance against Northern Illinois was one of the most pathetic things I've ever seen in my life. Just beyond horrific. So Ohio's last time as a 30-plus point favorite against an FBS team, the only other time in the Killer Sports database, week 7 of the 2000 season, they were 31-point favorites against Buffalo, 142-20. Their other games that big of a favorite, LIU in 2023, Hampton in 2017, Gardner-Webb in 2016, Austin Peay in 2013, Norfolk State in 2012, Gardner-Webb again, and VMI. So, yeah, UMass is, they might be the worst power rated FBS team I've ever had, I think.
I was looking up before this show, Bill Conley ranks I don't know how he does it, but he ranks every single D1, FBS, FCS, Division II, Division III, and NAIA teams. So he has a ranking on 766 teams. He's got Division III North Central currently ahead of UMass. I would love to see that matchup one day. We used to have those dumbass conversations when the Wizards were really bad. Is Kentucky better than the Wizards? And I said, no, it's stupid. This would be fun to see. Let's get North Central out there. Let them win the title. Let them win the Stag Bowl, and then they can go play UMass.
Which, like, there's like 900 North Central colleges or universities.
North Central is in Illinois, the one in Illinois.
Okay, Naperville. Okay.
Yeah, very good D3 program. Shout out to my alma mater getting in the field of the Division III college football playoffs there. All right.
They are, wow. So they're in their fourth season of college football.
Who's that?
North Central.
No, that's not accurate.
Well, no, I mean, they've had that before, but I think they're fourth season in Division III, maybe? I don't know.
No, they've been around.
I don't know.
They won the national title in 2019, I think.
Well, then Wikipedia is wrong. So I guess you can't believe everything you read on the internet. Either way, they seem to be very good at football.
Yeah, they're pretty solid. Yeah. All right. UMass, not good at football. Transition there. Akron, Bowling Green, Western Michigan, Northern Illinois. Anything in the other two MACtion games?
I mean, Ohio probably covers, right? I mean, Ohio was really bad last week, by the way. Not a good look for them on either side of the ball, really. I know that was a game that was 17-13, but that's more about Western Michigan just not being very good on offense. Ohio, 8 of 19 for 70 yards for Parker Navarro. As always, make sure you're checking on the weather in these MAC games because, as my Ohio brethren know back home, it's getting bad more often than not out there. So there's definitely that. I really wanted to be able to play Bowling Green this week. This is a terrible spot for Akron. They just lost the wagon wheel rivalry game in overtime. They weren't going to go to a bowl game anyway because of their APR scores. But like that Kent State game to me was their Super Bowl. That was their big game that they were getting up for. And they were the better team. They had 560 some odd yards of offense, I think, but still found a way to lose, as the Zips often do. I wanted to take Bowling Green, but I cannot lay 3.5 here. I mean, they haven't even scored 100 points in conference play yet, and they're 1-5. So I can't take them. I may lay it with Western Michigan, but Northern Illinois actually changed quarterbacks last week. In fact, I believe they used all three of them, or they used two of them in last week's game. But Jalen Macon wound up coming in, and he's a junior out of Nashville, big 6'5 kid. He actually played pretty well in that game against UMass, which, again, it's UMass, but 12 carries for 98 yards and 3 touchdowns, 3-for-4 passing for 73 yards and a touchdown. They've gotten nothing out of the quarterback position. So maybe over 38.5, since they might have a quarterback that can actually move the ball forward.
Over a Northern Illinois game. That's
I mean, I'm tempted. I got to see what the weather is like in DeKalb for that one, though.
All right. Wednesday, what a unique situation, because Miami last week lost as a underdog to Toledo. And then Daquan Finn apparently was like, I'm good. I'm going to peace out and go get ready for the NFL, which kind of made me laugh as well. Miami right now, a short dog to Buffalo. Central Michigan, a road favorite against Kent State. Those are your two Wednesday games.
Did NFL Europe return and I didn't know about it? Is that what Daquan Finn means?
Maybe the indoor league? I don't know.
Is it UFL still a thing, right? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's going to play arena football. I mean, he'd be the oldest guy on his team at this point, probably.
Henry Hessen will be your starter, by the way.
Yeah, and Buffalo's not any good either. This was a team that a lot of people bet their season win total under coming into the season, because last year they went, 9-3 in the regular season, 8-4, something like that. And they basically like won every one score game. They were a big negative regression candidate. The one thing I think I might take a look at here is actually Central Michigan -7.5. Again, it's not a good spot for Kent State. They need to win both of their games to get to a bowl. If they get to a bowl in Mark Kearney's first season, that's a remarkable achievement. But they had to play an overtime game last week. The defense was on the field a ton. Now you play a Central Michigan team, it's very, very physical. The number kind of tells a story here in this one, I think, with Central Michigan such a big road favorite with the Kent State team that kind of has some positive momentum within the program. I think this line, despite it moving down at some shops, is telling us that Central Michigan is the side. So I think of the five Maction games here on Tuesday and Wednesday, I think Central Michigan -7.5 would be my favorite side. And then the over 38.5 for Western Michigan and Northern Illinois.
All right, we'll wrap on. I don't have much on the Thursday game, but I did want to hit on Hawaii UNLV, obviously. I will be there, as you mentioned and we talked about already. The look for the 3.5. It popped for a little bit at everywhere. DraftKings, FanDuel, Circa. I was able to grab some 3.5s. Wouldn't be a surprise if it showed up again. I think this should be like a pick'em game on the field, on the neutral field, or not a neutral field, on a fast track there. Certainly a great live betting game, Adam, because both of these defenses, in theory, will give up some points. I don't know if Hawaii has faced a pass offense like what they're going to see from UNLV. But on the flip side, Mike Alejado and that offense has been humming right now. Hawaii and UNLV both have, I believe, mathematical opportunities to make the Mountain West Championship game. So this is a massive one. And, you know, I joked about it a little bit. I do wonder, Adam, if you think at the two games that these two teams have played last, Hawaii beat San Diego State 38-6, and then the Utah State and UNLV game went way under the total of 68.5. As crazy as it sounds, I think this total is a little short. It's 64.5. It's really high, but these two teams are going to throw the ball a ton, and it feels like it's just going to be back and forth type of game. So I certainly wouldn't take an under. And I think the number actually might be a little bit depressed because Hawaii's defense played well in the pouring rain against San Diego State. And the Utah State UNLV game was surprisingly low scoring.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. By the way, it may have been a bit of a Freudian slip from you calling this a neutral site game. Before correcting
yourself,
there will
be a lot of Hawaii fans.
There's going to be a lot of Hawaii fans. This is going to be a fun atmosphere for this game. I might have to come check this one out too.
Ninth Island, baby.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of Hawaii transplants here. A lot of people that like that little Southwest flight or Hawaiian Airlines flight from the island to come into Vegas. Not a bad weekend to do it. Hopefully, the Hawaii fans who show up are rooting for the Browns on Sunday if they decide to go to that game, which they won't. But yeah, I mean, this is a really, really interesting game in a variety of different ways, because like you said, I could see this being a track meet. I could see this being two teams throwing the football all over the yard and it wouldn't surprise me. I could also see, you know, maybe both these offenses kind of struggling a little bit just because, you know, they have played a couple of these lower scoring games here recently. So love this game for a variety of different reasons. I think it's going to be a very fun atmosphere at Allegiant Stadium here. But I'll tell you what, man, is this the quietest 8-2 season of all time for UNLV?
Yeah.
Like, there's no buzz. I mean, not that there's really a ton of buzz about UNLV football generally anyway, but like, they're 8-2. And like, I haven't heard a peep about them pretty much anywhere, you know, outside of the valley here. So, I don't know. It's strange. Like, I guess I kind of asked myself, like, how good is this team at 8-2 if no one's really saying much about them, whereas maybe it's just, you know, bias from being on this show, but I feel like Hawaii's gotten a lot of buzz for what Timmy Chang's doing there.
So, well, yeah, I think there is a sentimental side for bettors, especially, yeah. Right? They've been great covering the number. They're kind of getting back to the ways of Timmy Chang and Colt Brennan, the way that they played. They want to run. They want to up tempo, four wide. They got some really good receivers. But yeah, I mean, this is the perfect Mountain West game, right? It's going to be 10:30 Island game. I think it's on FS1. Like, this is either FS1 or CBS Sports Network. Double check that. But, you know, it's going to be on national television. But yeah, should be a lot of fun. By the way, I looked it up. I believe 6 players on Hawaii's roster played at Bishop Gorman here in Vegas, mm-hmm. and including Micah Alahado. So a lot of ties from Hawaii to the Ninth Island Vegas. And I think it's going to be an awesome game. And I'm very much looking forward to being there for this one.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's, you know, that's definitely a more compelling game to me than Florida State, NC State on that Friday night slate.
And it is FS1. Wanted to double check that. We'll talk about this game more certainly as the week goes on. Just a reminder, a little bit of a flip-flop. Mountain West. Matt Eumanns, who likes to bet the Mountain West, he will be my guest on Wednesday along with Brett Ciancia. And then Wes Reynolds will do the full week. What are we? Week 13 now?
Yep.
Yeah, week 13, man. Week 13 breakdown. For Adam Burke, thanks to Rick, our producer, I'm Tim Murray. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.